listen. Do you want to know a secret? Do you promise not to tell?
Kind of black tie events in that same tuxedo with the sleeveless tuxedo.
You just don't take off your jacket.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Or else, no, maybe you do. Or else people will buy you.
they might buy you. Like that, that's a danger I risk every day. I might be
unexpected. Someone might snatch you up.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to episode 12 of the Kiss and Tell cast.
Yeah.
That we've done a dozen.
Uh huh.
We've made it.
Not a baker's dozen.
Not a baker's dozen. That'll be next week. We've made it to number 12. We're pretty excited about it. We want to thank you, as always, for writing in. We got a pretty good selection this week.
We got a real big old bag.
A bonanza. We got a bonanza. We did get some comments from
Patrick Crotty.
Patrick Crotty. He made a comment on Twitter, and I do have to agree that, you know, you can't please all the people all the time.
No.
Everybody knows that. And there's we tried to maintain a balance on the show. We get a lot of emails that are kind of, you know, people that have a secret that because there's something bothering them and maybe want a little bit of help. And there's the other half is people that just do crazy things.
Yeah.
And need to get it off their chest. And we are so supportive of both.
Mm-hmm.
And Patrick was worried that we were airing a little too much into relationship advice territory.
Yeah.
And to Patrick, I can only say we got to read what people send.
Yeah. Patrick specifically was saying that he wants more butter and sprinkles kind of
secrets. Yeah, we do too. We love all the secrets we get. We could never pick a favorite, except my favorite is the butter sprinkles guy.
Yeah, my favorite too.
And
he's amazing.
He's amazing. God, that guy's good. But so keep that in mind. If you've got a secret, you don't have to tell some deep, dark, troublesome secret. Just tell some silly, crazy thing you did.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of our readers or listeners, they don't read anything.
What do they read?
They can't read. they are like lonely high schoolers, but I'm looking for some more sexy college people, sexy co-eds, I guess.
I think we all are. Mario, are you ready to leap into the Corey Schmitz Memorial feedback?
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
Okay, number one, and I was very pleased to hear from this particular person. I got a little feedback from them. Tranny porn dad guy here. And I just walked into my parents' room to talk to them about something, and there was a strap-on box just sitting on the dresser. Welp.
And Welp has, it's in all caps, and it has three W's.
www.elp. I feel a little vindicated by this, because this person was very worried. They were worried about their dad, worried about their mom. Sounds like mom knows.
Yeah, it sounds like they're awesome.
Yeah, it sounds like they're great parents. And you know, you were worried, and I think our advice or you know, our kind of take on it was don't judge your dad's porn until you see your mom's porn. And mm-hmm. it sounds like you got a little glimpse of that.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like they're on it.
My question would be, you know, the box was there. Was it full? Was it empty? Did it have a receipt?
What
was
is a strap-on box? What does that mean?
Is it? I don't know.
You put the box. Is that what
you
it
just
is?
Strap the box
on the box.
I don't know what you do with that. It sounds a little bit painful. I don't know. This has to be a weird thing to see that your parents are up to. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a healthy, great thing. Sure,
it is. Go a little for weird. It.
I mean, once upon a time, we had that girl who was saying that she wanted to, you know, pay a visit to her boyfriend from behind.
Mm-hmm. Peg him.
Peg him. And she was a little worried about it. And here it is. It's just normal mom and dad, Ward and June Cleaver, just your all-American family, just going at it.
Is that a Leave It to Beaver reference?
It is.
I didn't watch that show. Okay, I watched the movie, though.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. Good luck erasing that from your memory, because I don't think that's something
That is weird.
You want me to?
Can I say that I have found a dildo before in a person's parents' bedroom.
What were you doing in the parents' bedroom?
I don't remember, but I found it and I was like, oh, that's weird.
Did you?
And it was in a place where I could find it too.
Did you know what it was at the time?
Yeah, I was probably like 12 or something.
So you knew.
But I think that's kind of cool that these people, and it was a single mother.
Actually, that reminds me. I had kind of forgotten about this, but some friends of mine and I, when I was maybe around 12 or 13,
mm-hmm.
we found in his parents' room instructional sex tapes.
Hmm.
But highly...
Kama Sutra kind of thing? Or,
well, no.
Or more like, American?
Actually, strangely basic. Like, Absolutely bare bones. The most shocking one, which I'm still a little surprised by this. This has occurred to me a few days ago, maybe after reading this email. There was one for men on how to masturbate.
What?
That's like, you don't.
That's weird.
You don't teach birds to fly. You don't teach fish to swim.
You just push them into the pool or something.
There are things that are just so deeply ingrained in a species that when they're, as soon as they're hatched, they know what to do. And I feel like masturbation is something you don't need a lesson in.
Yeah.
I was pretty confused by it.
Some people just, I've heard stories, I think from this podcast, about people who masturbate and they don't know what they're doing. They just like, they don't know what it's called, and they just thought they invented this new type of fun. Yeah.
I don't know if I mentioned this. I think I mentioned, you know, that the first time that I did it was kind of an accident, and that when I climaxed, I did not know what had just happened.
I think maybe I'm thinking of your story then.
Well, that I think it came from one of the emails, but I don't know if I mentioned the circumstances of that.
Okay, yeah. How was it an accident?
Okay, I don't know how. I'm going to guess about 12. I think a little younger, but somewhere around that time, like just barely pubescent.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember we had gone to a lake called Lake Meredith. Okay. And, you know, swim and play all day. Bad sunburn. All over, like back, upper thighs. And I think what had happened is when we got home, we had, you know, the aloe vera gel that you put on sunburns.
Sure.
And I was just, since I was basically burned all over, I was just putting it everywhere.
Oh my gosh. And
one thing led to another, and I made some discoveries that day. Some life-changing discoveries.
Wow.
My sunburn suddenly wasn't bothering me so much. Speaking of that, moving on to the next entry in the old feedback, loud masturbating secret giver here, and I'm actually a guy and like to moan loudly. I guess that's pretty odd, though I really think I could incorporate a gong and some jingly bells for some added ambiance.
I don't know why this person said it was odd, because I said that I enjoyed doing that also.
I think it was maybe my fault. I think that I maybe implied, I have a certain prejudice, and to me it just seems more normal for girls to do this. And I maybe implied that it was unusual for men.
Maybe you just haven't slept with enough men.
Or, yeah, actually, but it got me thinking because, you know, when I'm a modern person and I'm
a modern woman,
open-minded. And when I come to, when I discover something like this, like I have some kind of block of prejudice, I like to try to deconstruct it.
Okay.
And I came up with two angles.
Okay.
Okay, angle number one. Reasons why I'm quiet, why I masturbate and expect all men to be quiet. Reason number one. I've written a little thesis.
Okay.
No, reason number one is I think when I was in my early teens, I didn't have a door to my room. I lived kind of annexed off the garage in the back of the utility room. So it was private and it was isolated and I could hear someone coming. So it was fine. That wasn't the problem. But there wasn't really a sound barrier.
When you said coming, I thought of something else.
That's not what, okay. That's a different thing. Although that, okay.
Yeah.
No, anyway.
We're not going to go there.
Anyway, I think it conditioned me over time to be very, very quiet just because of the circumstances. It was dangerous to be loud.
Right.
You know? And I think that just became very deeply ingrained in me. So that is reason number one. Reason number two, and this is something I became aware of, and I think that this plays into it also, and it involves pornography, and I have realized that I don't like porn where the guy makes a lot of noise.
Yeah, me neither.
And I've kind of dissected that down to a suspension of disbelief thing, and that the more I can hear him, the more difficult it is for me to like do whatever the thing is where you're placing yourself in the scenario.
I can see that. Yeah.
And so it's fine if the lady's loud, that's all fine. But when I hear another guy, it's like, wait, there's another dude here. Suddenly it's not comfortable. So I think those are my two reasons that I took it to be a little unusual to want to be loud. But you know what? If that's what you're into and it's ringing your bell, it's jingling your jingle bells, go for it.
Yeah.
Have a good time. Knock yourself out. I didn't mean to imply you're a weirdo. I just happen to have some hangups that thanks to you,
anonymous masturbating secret giver.
You've helped me dissect a few things.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. Next, I love your podcast so much, and I want to tell everyone I know about it, but I'm really afraid that they'll hear some of my secrets and know it's me.
I don't think they'll know.
I have a kind of a problem with this because this is, we, you know, we depend on word of mouth for spreading this primarily. We don't have any, we don't have any big venues for advertising. And so we've grown at a pretty steady clip for the most part. I've been pretty pleased with, with Array, although we've plateaued a little bit, but really we depend so much on people telling their friends about it. And I think you can take this and you can flip it and you can look at it another way. Telling your friends about it. On the one hand, yeah, maybe they'll hear your secret, but think about this. Maybe they'll write in a secret and you'll get to hear something crazy about your friends and you'll know about it. Okay. So I think you need to view it that way. I think we really need, you got to tell everybody, you got to tell all your friends, because we need it. We need your help. We need you to like us on Facebook and all that jazz.
Yeah.
And I actually, this is, I don't want to sound like I'm making any ultimatums here, but I watched a documentary last night that Mari knows about, and it's about the band Beulah, and it's called A Good Band Is Easy to Kill.
You're really good at plugging things.
And,
you know, not in like a bad way.
They're
it's
not
just
paying
like,
us.
No, I know. It's just like, you're good at mentioning things.
I got these, connections.
I forget you watched that.
Okay. Got these connections upstairs.
Okay. Yeah.
Continue. And one of the things, I don't think it was explicitly mentioned in the movie. They talked about breaking up. They didn't know if they were going to, but I read about it and they had made kind of a pact in the band that if their final album Yoko did not go gold, they would break up.
Oh, really? That's sad.
It is sad because it's a really good album. And it has my favorite Beulah song on it, Don't Forget to Breathe.
It is my least favorite album.
Because it's so
sad. Ever. Not just Beulah, just in general.
Because it's so heart-crushing.
It's so different from the rest of their work. I still like it, you know, but it's so different.
Don't Forget to Breathe is easily my favorite Beulah song.
How does it go?
I will probably cry.
Should we just play it in the podcast?
Can I say, I'll do a cover of it after the show.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
But anyway, I don't want it to come to that. I don't want us to have to say, if we don't get 2,000 listens this week, we're not going to do it anymore.
Right.
Because we don't want to do ultimatums like that. But we do need you guys to, you know, spread it out there. Get out there. We need your help. Tweet it. It doesn't take any work.
And there's nothing, I don't know what the point of the podcast is. Maybe it's to make people feel better. But if you're still, like, you know, holding up all these feelings inside and you're not, confident in yourself, you gotta, you know, own up to some of these things.
Yeah, sure. Get out. It'll maybe you'll learn some things about your friends and they'll learn some things about you. And our next entry in Corey's old feedback. Sometimes I wish Mari's voice could come out of his body like a soul and give me a back massage.
Baby Giraffes was tweeting at me about something like this. So if this is him, He has imagined two different ways for my body to, or for my voice to please him.
Was that, there was some fan art to do with this, is
yes,
that correct?
Yeah.
Who did that fan art?
That was a friend of a friend kind of thing. I don't remember her name off the top of my head.
Well,
I think
we'll get
it's
in the show notes.
Something about foxes. I think it's Everyday Fox.
So, okay, well, I don't want to come out like, you know, I don't want to point fingers at anybody. This is an anonymous submission. Mm-hmm. I will say that I am developing a complex about my voice.
No, why?
And every week we get emails about Mari's voice and how they love his voice and they love the sound of his voice and how Mari's so cute and handsome and how they love him and want to marry him and have sex with his voice. And I'm developing a complex and I'm wondering if I should start you to do some kind of vocal exercises and maybe speak a little more deeply, or I don't know what to do about it.
I don't know.
I'm falling apart.
I've always been really self-conscious about my voice.
Well, everybody loves your voice and they hate mine.
That's not true. I'm not saying this to be mean, but Corey is really mean about my voice all the time.
He's jealous. There's, I think it's in the book Snuff, Chuck Palahniuk book.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's that book where he talks about, you know, his book is always full of amazing little tidbits and facts. All of his books.
Yeah.
And in this one, I think one of the things he talks about is sort of horrible things that stars go through to become famous. And I don't remember which star it was, but I think there was a star who was good looking. He was going to be a movie star, but his voice wasn't right. So his agent or somebody made him just do terrible things like drink, I don't even know, poison. Just something to ruin his vocal cords. So he'd have a kind of a gravelier, sexy voice. So I'm going to start just chewing up glass and just swallowing it.
I don't think that's what you're supposed to do.
I'm going
to
do it.
I don't think you pick a random dangerous thing and then start doing it.
I'm going to do it. Next in Corey's old feedback, and this is part of a saga. This has become a saga of feedback. This is maybe our fifth email from this person. Fifth?
Are you sure?
I didn't skip one, did I?
Oh, I skipped ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Next entry in the blowjob saga.
Mm-hmm.
There were definitely blowjobs given. Confession about giving into temptation was me. We just saw each other for the last time tonight. We agreed it was best not to see each other anymore, and I'm devastated. I think I still love him. Blowjob neighbor chick. To bring you all up to date, soap opera style.
Yeah.
We got an entry saying, you know, there was a secret from someone that wanted to give their neighbor a blowjob. Mm-hmm. Said, don't do it.
Yeah.
Later, we got what may have been a message about possibly giving into temptation. Or someone giving into temptation. We didn't know who it was. I speculated that it might be this person.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, we got, I think we got another email about it saying that she might still love the guy. And then here's this one.
Was there that?
Yeah. So this has been an ongoing thing. She gave into temptation. She didn't regret it at the time. Now she's in this position where she feels like she has to end it. It's going to be rough. Not going to see each other anymore, which I don't know how that's going to work because they're neighbors.
Yeah,
devastated. Think I still love him. And I've been thinking about this in my own life, and I think that part of the reality of life that's different from movies and books and popular fiction, the way people, you know, the fairy tale way you want it to go, is that there's usually a pretty clear path that you're supposed to take in fairy tale life. Like,
right.
You do this thing, you like, rescue the
like
mate.
One person is evil and you one kill person
the
dragon. Is awesome.
Good guy, bad guy. Even, and you know, there's always the good bad dichotomy, and everybody knows that's pretty naive, but even in, you know, a kind of less fanciful rose colored glasses world where
mm-hmm.
there's even things that are bad where it's like, I got to do what I got to do, but I know what the right thing is to do.
Right.
And the reality of life is it's usually not that there's something good and there's something bad. There's something that things that may be both good or both compelling that you, and you just don't know what to do, and you just got to make a choice. And it's rough. And there's two things that I wanted to mention. One is an amazing book called The Unbearable Lightness of Being. And that's really the title comes from the lead character saying like the outline of life is just so vague. It's mm-hmm. just, you don't know what the right choice is. You make this choice and you only have one life. And it's a pretty amazing book. And it's about this doctor in the Czech Republic, maybe Czechoslovakia at the time that it's set. I think so. And he's a womanizer, but then he kind of falls for this girl and gets married to her. And he's hugely divided because he's married to this woman, but he still has these, you know, he's still drawn to sleep with all these women.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you should check that book out. Another book that I was thinking of just in the context of, you know, loves that just cannot be. For whatever reason, the stars are not aligned right. You guys, there may be amazing chemistry. You're drawn to each other. Maybe you think you love each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not working out. And it's an amazing book. It's another Nabokov book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because everybody gives Nabokov a hard time for Lolita because of what it's ostensibly about.
Do they give
about.
Him a hard time?
Or they just, you know, it's kind of socially frowned upon because of the subject matter.
Okay, yeah.
Which I think is a little unreasonable because these people have obviously not read his this other book that mm-hmm. I'm probably going to pronounce the name wrong, but I've always called it Ada or Adore, A Family Chronicle. And in this book, there are two children that fall in love and start having sex, and later it turns out they're brother and sister. And also they live on an alternate version of planet Earth.
Wait, okay, two children from different families, and then they realize?
Well, they think that they're from different families. They think that they're cousins.
How do they live together?
It's complicated. It's okay. Very complicated. But the cousins, these two cousins fall in love. They start having sex while still pretty much kiddos. Just
before
barely,
knowing what sex is.
Barely really. Pubescent. Mm-hmm. And then they find out that they're actually brother and sister. Leads to a crazy life for both of them of lots of turmoil and struggle. It's an amazing book. And I really enjoy it. It's one of my favorite Nabokov books. I think it's hard to say if I like it as much as Lolita because it's so different. But it's really amazing, and it's definitely worth reading.
Mm-hmm.
I came upon it just trying to think of books of these just absolute, you know, impossible love scenarios. And it's the one that came to mind with the brother and sister. So mm-hmm. I think one of the things that's helpful or that you find some value from is when you find a book that parallels your life enough that you can kind of work through the problems by seeing how the character works through them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've found that to be helpful in my life. And I think that's a good thing to do. So, I mean, I'm sure I come across as a bookworm because I'm always recommending books, but mm-hmm. I feel like that's one of the huge values of literature is that you get almost this kind of test bed where you can see like, oh, how does this play out?
Right.
And I think that's a nifty thing.
I'm nodding my head.
Yeah, Mari's nodding it. You know what I'm starving for, Marty?
What are you starving for?
Starving for secrets.
Okay, let's feed you. Let's feed your secret belly.
Yeah.
Okay, secret number one. My very first real crush was my 8th grade band director. I bought him an anonymous candygram on Valentine's Day, but I canceled it after he told us, the very next period, that he and his fiance had split, backwards crying face. I still wonder if I should have let him receive it.
So we asked for teacher, hot mm-hmm. for teacher secrets. Mm-hmm. We did get some nice ones. Thanks for everybody who wrote in. We're not going to cover them all, but yeah. It was nice to hear those. What do you think about this one, Murray?
So candygram, I feel like that's something they do through the school, right?
I don't know. I don't know if it was an outside service or what.
I don't think an eighth grader would go out of their way to.
I don't know.
It's strange that they were allowed to send a candygram to their teacher.
I have to say that it could have been a disaster
if you did
send it and he thought it was anonymous and he thought it was from his fiance he'd just broken up with trying to.
That is true.
That would have been the worst thing. So if you're still wondering if you should have let him receive it, I think no. I think even if it's there was the chances were a billion to one that it would have played out that way, mm-hmm. just for the moment that maybe through his mind flashed the possibility, oh, it's going to be okay, she still wants me, and then it's just a random candygram from a student, that would have been crushing.
Yeah, because there's no way that he could find out other than confronting his ex-fiance.
Oh, yeah, not good. And actually, I mean, this rings a bell in a weird way, and I maybe it will come to me exactly. And I can't even remember which side of it I've been on, uh-huh. but I feel like I've been in a uncomfortable scenario like this because of sending flowers. Sometimes it's a gamble, and I guess if you're not pretty sure that this person is expecting something from you, or not even expecting, but just would know that it's from you, maybe think twice. I think you made the right choice by not.
I wouldn't say it's a gamble. Like, it's don't a gamble. Don't it's a, do anything nice for anyone ever because it might hurt their feelings.
No, well, in this
Valentine's Day,
a seemingly something that could be construed as a romantic gesture to someone that you're not romantically involved in could maybe lead to some problems. Maybe that's the point.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry out there to the girl who got flowers that she wished were from me and Mark.
I've never bought flowers for anyone because I'm so
not even one.
No, never. Maybe I brought like a corset to a girl, but that was pretty standard. I think it was like a carnation or something. But I've, sometimes, I think I've asked Christina what kind of flowers she likes so I could secretly buy her flowers later, but I think I forgot.
I will admit
yeah.
that in the notes section in my contacts,
uh-huh.
On a handful of people, you will find things like ring size. You'll find things like favorite flower.
How do you find out someone's ring size?
Do
you secretly measure their fingers?
No, actually, the trick is to get something out in conversation and then have a note of it that later you will pull it out in a way that they're just baffled by. You know that they right. just and if you pay attention and you're careful, people let things like that go all the time.
Okay, so it's more about listening than directing a conversation.
You can if someone like comments on a ring, you can maybe kind of steer it that
okay.
way.
Okay,
but anyway, I think that's the kind of person I am. Mm-hmm. If anyone that I'm friends with to even a somewhat minimal degree. But friends with that I'm going to be in contact with or hang out with, mm-hmm. if they mention their birthday, I immediately make a note of it. If they mention anything, and the further along you get, the more likely I am to make notes to the point where if it's someone that I'm involved in, I think it's you gotta keep notes of that stuff.
Yeah.
You gotta know what kind of flower they like. You gotta know that stuff.
That's good. And you keep it in your like There's address
notes
book or what
section in the context in the Mac. Address books and even like on your iPhone, there's okay. just a section called notes. There's so many little things I keep in those, like the day we
That's
did this
cute.
Or the day we met, or even some things that are somewhat randomly tangential, but would just be a nice thing for someone to remember. Like
That's
if
nice.
Someone mentions their mom, today's my mom's birthday, then you can, mm-hmm. Just something like that.
Right. I tried doing things like that. I think I've like tried to bring up, like I've guided the conversation about flowers. Like, what's your favorite flower? Like, what's your favorite, whatever color. And I've remembered like her brother's birthday, but then I just forget about it. And so that's a
Make
good solution.
Make a note of it.
Yeah.
And then it will crush your heart when you look at that note later and you're no longer talking to that person.
Yeah. Okay, but what? Okay, flowers.
Okay.
Should flowers. I've never bought flowers for a girl or a boy for that matter. Do I have to know their favorite flower?
No, there are plenty of occasion appropriate flowers, uh-huh. particularly when you're heavily involved with someone. Like a red rose as a romantic gesture is pretty standard. You can't really fail with that.
Okay.
Birthdays, things like that also. And also, I think, especially in this day and age, there's plenty of girls who don't really know what their favorite flower is. Like right. they just, and so you can just get them some flowers. And it's, in a lot of ways, it's the thought that counts. I've gotten girls potted plants just because I thought it was funny and cute. And that way it's like, you know, you don't kill it. It's just a little plant
yeah.
that they can take care of. And, or like if you're at the grocery store, you can stop for 2 seconds and look at the flowers and just try to catch if they comment on anything or they're smelling orchids or something.
Mm.
You know, you just pay attention. That's a tip.
Okay.
Are we ready now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry we talked about flowers for so long.
No, listen, dudes. It's nice. Gestures. Do some nice romantic gestures.
Okay. This one's a strange change of pace.
Okay.
I have a fetish with stringing guys along, telling them everything they want to hear, and then dumping them flat on their backs. It's sick and twisted and wrong, but I don't know how to stop.
Is this from... Part of me wants to feel like this is from every girl I've ever known.
Because I think they got together and wrote this email.
I have a history of liking girls, especially if I just start like at a neutral baseline, the meaner a girl is to me, the more likely I will be fascinated with her, which isn't necessarily something I strive for.
I feel like I've had crushes on mean girls just because they seem so mysterious and dark.
Just mean to you. Or there's a certain look that girls can give me. And by that, I mean when they just look right through me like I don't exist, that I find very appealing.
Right.
But I've tried to get a little bit over. I think that, man, you're a terrible person.
That's rough, man.
It's a little harsh.
You're hurting our feelings.
No, I don't want to hurt your feelings. No,
I mean this person, this girl.
You're hurting my feelings. Actually, here's something I found about myself at a certain point. And it wasn't necessarily this blatant or this kind of harshly put, but there was definitely a time in my life that I realized that a lot of my self-esteem or kind of my personal evaluation of myself came from how many girls seemed to be interested in me.
Oh, I see.
So relationships, anything. It's just that I had a lot of girls that were interested in me. And that was like a... somehow in my mind, maybe it's because it was after high school when no girls were interested in me.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after high school, like suddenly some girls were, and then it became very important to me. And I remember one Christmas, I had 9 girls on my Christmas list, and I had to very carefully buy them the right presents so none of them seemed like the presents were better.
Right.
It was a dangerous balance. It was a dangerous game.
Uh-huh. 9 girls, jeez.
And I wasn't like romantically involved in 9
girls.
No,
I know.
It was that 9 girls were interested in me on some level, to varying degrees.
Right.
But it was too much.
Yeah, I don't think I even know 9 girls.
No, I don't anymore.
There's like my mom and then my sister.
Yeah, it was moms and aunts mainly. I can relate to the point that there you can definitely get a self-esteem boost from having people like you. If you don't like those people back, it's probably pretty easy to treat them badly and even resent them for liking you. And so maybe I would hazard a guess that the core of this is kind of a self-esteem issue. That you get some kind of confidence boost out of these guys coming after you, but then once you kind of you win them, the game is over, and then it's you're not really into it. You need to just not do that, and maybe go back to the core of it and see what it is. This could, who knows? This could go back to so many things, and if you want to get Freudian on it, it could go back to maybe feeling like your dad was never proud of you, or whatever. Who knows what it goes back to, but. Maybe you personally work back on it and figure out what it is, but man, you will mess some people up.
Mm-hmm.
I myself included, I have been messed up by girls like this, particularly because I'm such a guarded person that when I encounter a girl like this, she has to work extra hard to string me along because it takes a long time. And then by then I'm just ruined.
Yeah.
So be careful. You're probably breaking some hearts out there that may not mend so quickly.
I think you can be casual about relationships and, well, not like, not casual sex like casual sex, but, you know, you can be friends with people, but don't string them along.
Yeah, not intentionally. Telling them what they want to hear, et cetera, et cetera. Don't, it's gross.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I don't like it. And if you say it's a fetish, it sounds like you're getting some kind of satisfaction out of it. And maybe like boys were mean to you in school and this is your way to exact revenge on them or something.
Yeah.
You just got to figure out what's at the core of it. But maybe take a break. I would say if it was me and I was in a situation like this and I wanted to get out of it, the way you're not going to work through it while you're doing it. So you just maybe need to take a break from dudes.
Yeah. If you know it's wrong, please just stop.
Yeah. And if you, but you know, if you can't stop just cold turkey, you need to take some time. Like I'm on a girl break to like figure some stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like totally. You just take a break. Get out of there.
That's a different thing, but yeah.
And man, just stop it. What are you doing? You
can't knock it off.
Hate your guts. I want to talk to you.
You're anymore. A poop head.
Yeah. Jerk.
I'm a university student currently in a social work program, but what I really want to do is go into the arts and become an illustrator. But I'm scared of not only about what my parents will say, but I also fear of being in debt and not becoming an accomplished artist.
You have clearly come to the right two people because I am in staggering debt from school.
And I can barely pay rent.
And Mare lives on free health bars that we got at Betchfest.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a couple of ways we can approach this.
Mm-hmm.
One, if this is something you need to do and you're in this thing that you're not feeling is the right thing and you need to go out, you can go out and do it, man. You can get out there.
What advice is that? What are you saying?
Like this guy, if you're in this program and it's not feeling right and what you really want to do, don't let fear hold you back. Fear of success, anything. If you really want to go into the arts and you really want to become an illustrator,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if that's really what you want to do,
yeah.
I don't hold back from that.
And now, honestly, there's nothing holding you back.
Well, there may be one.
Nothing.
Okay, here's the one thing.
No, there's nothing.
If you really like the idea of being an illustrator and not the idea of drawing all of the time, you know what I mean? Like, I feel
you're
like
talking about you.
Well, partially. No, actually, to a degree, I am because I
no,
want to
you
be
totally
a,
are.
I want to be a person that draws, but I hate drawing. Yeah. I can draw okay.
Okay.
I can draw passably well, but I hate it. I don't enjoy it
That's
at all.
So weird because I've seen your drawings and you're good at drawing.
Yeah, but it's not about that. It's not, it would be one thing if I just thought I'm bad at drawing, I give up. It is that drawing is such mental, difficult, stressful work for me that it's really hard for me to do. And it takes me a long time to get my mind around it.
I want that to be fixed.
Comfortable with it. Remember when I was for a while and then I got ruined?
Yeah.
When I was drawing all the
time.
Maybe
you just need to draw more. You know, maybe that sounds like kind of bad advice if you hate it so much, but that's
no, I need low stress drawing where there's no expectations.
Yeah.
But anyway, I wasn't necessarily talking about me. I was talking about is you wanting to be an artist and wanting to make art are not necessarily the same things. And be sure that you know what you're getting into. Is that making sense?
One more time.
Wanting to make art,
okay.
And wanting to be an artist. Like, I want to be an artist. I want to be the culture of an artist. I want that.
Right.
I want to fall into that archetype.
Yeah, I want that.
And wanting to actually do the work are not the same thing.
Yeah.
They can overlap. They should overlap. If they don't, if you just want to draw all the time but don't want to be an artist, you're not going to do the right kinds of things to promote yourself and get jobs and so on. And if you just want to be an artist and not make art, well, that's an obvious problem.
Yeah.
Speaking of school.
Sure. I'm in high school and the kids who party and do drugs all the time seem like idiots to me. I'm not against doing drugs or anything, but when I hear them bragging, I want to sit them down and smack them with the newspaper like bad puppies. I feel judgmental.
You are judgmental.
Yeah, it's because you're judging them.
But they're also idiots. So
yeah.
Everybody's two wrongs have made a right here today.
So everything's fine.
Everything's fine.
You are an idiot, so you know a lot about this. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. No, I hate parties.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really like people who party. I didn't in school, and I didn't. And look at me. I've grown up to be lonely and have no understanding of the basic mechanics of human interaction. So if you want to be like me and not really want to interact with people,
uh-huh.
then you're on.
That's a horrible thing to say.
You're on your way to a great start. You're off to a great misanthropic life.
I don't know what to say to this person because I drank and did drugs in high school, and I don't drink or do drugs almost ever these days. But and I don't want to say you should experiment. You should definitely do drugs because they're awesome. I think it has something to do with being open and trying things,
or even not even trying, or just being exposed to it in a way.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you can be whatever the alternative is. My alternative in high school was sitting at home in front of a computer for my whole youth.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever I learned from that, like I will always kind of wish that I was out causing trouble maybe more than I did.
Mm-hmm.
And even if I wasn't the one drinking or doing any drugs, like there's other things that, you know, I could have been hanging out with them or doing something. I don't know what the right answer is.
That's true. Yeah.
Maybe. And I think probably the real answer is if you're not liking it, we're not going to tell you to do something you don't feel right about or don't want to mm-hmm. do, but also I would say be careful of the barriers you set up between yourself and other people, especially at such an early age.
Mm-hmm.
And something I've noticed somewhat recently in my life is that I've consistently made decisions that kind of separate myself
right.
from people.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes from everything from not really wanting to drink. So even now I don't go out with my coworkers, but even also things like being vegan.
Yeah.
So then I don't go to restaurants with people and eat in the same way.
I think about that too.
Yeah. I've really made, and it's not, I could go on. Like mm-hmm. there's a lot of decisions I've made in my life that separate me from other people. For example, going to college when I was 26 instead mm-hmm. of when I was 20.
Right.
If I'd gone when I was 20, it would have been my direct peers. I would have interacted. I would have been immersed more directly. But mm-hmm. instead, I chose to go much later and I had a more difficult time kind of assimilating. And I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer to that. And on the one end of the spectrum, you have kind of the Sartre no exit line, hell is other people.
Yeah.
Which I tend to agree with. But on the other end, you have kind of that's all we got. We're just a bunch of people around.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't really have much except for each other. And I don't know what the right answer is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you need to explore it a little bit. Just be careful signing off on things when you're just getting started, I guess. Especially mm-hmm. when you're in high school.
Yeah. These people are idiots because that's all they talk about. But it doesn't it's not that they are necessarily bad people. Because they do these things.
Yeah. And I mean, that's just how people are. They don't.
Yeah.
They don't.
And high school's awful.
High school's awful. High school people are awful. Nobody knows what they're doing. It's fine. I don't think there's any problem with your scenario. I just want to caution you. Just be careful if you're setting yourself on a track of estranging yourself. You don't need to avoid these scenarios. You can be involved with them in a different way. And we've already talked about, you know, you can be the guy at the party that's looking out for your drunk friends, or you can be the designated driver, or you can be whatever. You can still be involved and you'll probably still have fun and have some kind of experience that you can look back on other than just sitting at home looking at Tumblr or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Find a good middle ground and be willing to foray in both directions.
Yep. I'm an artist, and like many of my contemporaries, I went through a lot of embarrassing phases during my teenage years. During the height of those particularly embarrassing phase of indiscriminately loving anything anime looking, I drew and posted some dreadful explicit fan art. Some of it probably even qualified as furry. I've never told my closest friends or boyfriends about these exploits. Well, over half a decade later, I still think back on those dreadful JPEGs and wonder if somewhere out there, some people still have those awful products of my libidinous teenage confusion on their hard drives. Libidinous? Is that right?
Libidinous.
Libidinous? Yeah. I've never seen that. I know what it means, but I've never seen that word.
So this makes me think of two things right away. And one of those things is your diary comics from high school.
Mine?
Yeah. Just your...
What about why?
Well, just as kind of concrete illustrated evidence of you being young and ridiculous. And what is your take on it? How do you feel about those?
About my diary comics?
Yeah, not that. And I know that's not the same thing as you doing a bunch of furry stuff, but just because, you know, it's about 5 years later,
right.
You have these things that you drew as a kind of a different person.
Well, I posted those. I never posted them online because I just wasn't, I didn't have the resources and I didn't know what I was doing. Like I had a scanner, but I didn't know how to use it and none of my images were prepared for scanning. So these things, they were something that I didn't show a lot of people and they weren't for other people, really. It was, for whatever reason, it was just like, it was mostly for me. And maybe as like a silent, brooding, martyristic, if that's a word, way of expressing feelings towards people that I thought would never see them.
You went back and redrew some.
I redrew some, yeah.
But I guess my question is, you know, this is, it's not just limited to drawings, because there's plenty of people that go back and burn their journals or burn their mm-hmm. diaries or something because they're just so disgusted with the person they were. Yeah. Is there, you don't have anything like that within those?
No, right? I have not within the journal comics, but I have like notebooks of terrible poems / raps. Uh-huh. And I have, I'm sure you can dig up some art that I've done that's terrible. And, you know, that anime phase, I think you'd have to try really hard. It was on communities that are now dead. So
I was trying to think if I had anything quite like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I ever really drew anything that was kind of sexy mm-hmm. with one exception. I think that one exception might be why there's only one example. And
because you were bad at it.
Is no, that why? I remember because I got caught and I was in. So it's, I think it was shortly after my parents got divorced. I was having to see a counselor. I was uh-huh. the world was worried about me. I was a troubled young man.
Yeah.
And I think it had not been too long, or it was around that time that I found in the garage my dad's old Playboys. So I was just starting to figure out what. Uh-huh. I think it was third grade. I wasn't very old. Didn't really know what was going on.
Yeah.
I just knew that maybe naked ladies were compelling, even if I didn't exactly know why.
Right. I see.
And I made a mistake. And what? I used to lie to teachers, and I don't want to say that I was a good liar, but I was just a quick liar. And maybe for a period when I was young, and I think every kid goes through that where,
sure,
you know, like, did you do this? No. When it was clearly them.
Right? Yeah. If you're going to get, yeah, it's about like an immediate response. If you're going to get in trouble. Yeah.
But it was never, for whatever reason, at least as far as I remember, it was never like, oh, I didn't do it. It was, I need an alibi or need something. Anyway, so I remember being in a third grade class, Miss mm-hmm. Moore's class.
Okay.
And I thought I was clear. I thought the coast was clear. I had my arm around my paper, whatever. And I was trying maybe my first and last attempt. Probably not. But what in my memory is my first and last attempt to draw a naked woman.
Mm-hmm.
It was in no way. It was very kind of Egyptian, planar, not a provocative pose, anything. It was basically just a lady shape mm-hmm. with boobs.
Okay. In the middle of class.
I think the teacher had left the room or something, or we were supposed to be doing some work and I wasn't doing it or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But out of nowhere swoops the teacher. She suddenly materializes in front of me.
Like a scene from Harry Potter.
Just, yeah, she's just suddenly there.
Okay.
And she, I don't know, she must have caught a glimpse of it, something. And
oh, were you drawing her? Did she?
No. And she said, I don't know if she said, what are you drawing? Or let me see it, like sternly, like I was in trouble.
Yeah.
And so my mind raced, like, how can I get out of this?
Yeah.
What am I going to do? I had it covered up and I was like, I don't know if she's seen it. I don't know what it is. Here's the brilliant plan. There was a mailbox in that class uh-huh. and it was like a, you know, real metal mailbox. And the purpose of it was to give things to the teacher. And it was her mailbox. And it wasn't like a teacher slot mailbox. It was her mailbox. And okay. you could put whatever, I think, I don't know, this isn't the right example, but like apple for the teacher mm-hmm. or whatever. Or if you sure. did something, or if your mom sent a thank you note or whatever, you'd put
okay.
it in the mailbox.
Okay.
And there was some precedent for like girls in the class, something like that, that wanted to make something for the teacher. Third grade. And so they would go put it in the mailbox.
Mm-hmm.
And so my brilliant idea was, okay, I'll tell her that it's for her and it's going to go in her mailbox. So then she can't look at it and it's a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
So I say this to her.
Yeah. You say it's a surprise.
I say, no, you can't see it. It's for you. It's a surprise. Something like that.
Uh-huh.
Not really putting together the fact that she's seen it's a naked girl. So now,
well, you weren't sure if she saw it,
but what I had okay, basically okay. done is said, I'm drawing a naked woman to put in your mailbox as a gift to you.
Okay.
Is what I accidentally said.
Yes.
And so rather than take it away, she looks at me in this kind of troubled,
mm-hmm.
quizzical way mm-hmm. of not sure how to handle this. Like this is a problem. This is a disturbed child. He's drawing naked women for me. And rather than handle it herself, she just kind of walks away and goes and tells the counselor it's like suddenly this concern, like he has got some serious behavior problems.
Yeah.
This is like next level. He's now drawing naked women to put in my mailbox. So I've like traumatized this teacher to some level. She has reported this to my counselor, and then the counselor The counselor comes to me with it next time during our session. Like, so, you know, Miss Moore told me what happened
about class. The drawing.
And it should have just been some stupid thing. Like, she takes it up and throws it away or sends a note to my mom.
Okay. But did you lie to get out of that? Or was there
I don't think
a cascade of lies?
I don't think I knew what to say. Uh-huh. And I don't think it was even maybe for several years that the full implication, maybe a lot of years, of what I had done really set in. Like, you basically told this woman that you're like a psychopath and you're drawing naked.
Well, at least she wasn't being murdered or something.
No, but anyway, that is what comes to mind.
Okay.
When with embarrassing childhood drawings was me basically implying that I was a 10-year-old pervert and I was going to put mm-hmm. naked women in my teacher's mailbox. And I think maybe I learned a lesson about lying at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And after a few other traumatic lying experiences, I eventually decided to just, I think I'm just going to tell the truth all the time.
It's
a good policy. Not mm-hmm. even out of morality, just because you can get yourself in some.
No. Yeah. I think honesty is easier sometimes.
It is easier. It's the best policy
in the long run. Yeah.
A number of practical reasons.
I once drew a, not sexy because it wasn't sexy, but it was supposed to be sexy, drawing of Lara Croft from Tomb Raider.
Okay.
Not Angelina Jolie, not like just from a movie, Croft. Just, yeah. You know, the low poly.
Polygons.
Yeah. From like a video game magazine. And it was for, I hadn't really drawn girls, you know, and I still, like, it's still something I'm getting used to. I don't know how their bodies work.
Yeah, it's just shaped, you know. Funny. It's all circles.
Yeah. and it was this terrible drawing, and it was for a boy in my classroom. He asked me to draw this like dirty picture.
He commissioned.
So I was like, oh, like an art gig, basically. Like, that's kind of cool, mm-hmm. you know? And when you're at that age, everything's like about bartering, mm-hmm. you know, you exchange things for friendship sometimes. And I think he must have given me something in exchange, but it was such a bad drawing. It doesn't haunt me, but I just think about it like, I just feel so dirty for doing it.
You think it's out there somewhere? It's almost like you were a prostitute a little bit. Like you did, you engaged in some kind of illustrative prostitution.
Yeah, I kind of feel like he has a drawing of me right now in a dress.
Do you think he maybe altered it?
Yeah.
Okay. What's next?
I'm known for dating obnoxiously crude guys. You know, the guy who makes dirty jokes, only wants sex from a virgin, and makes me feel like I can't be beautiful. Secretly, I love smart, shy guys, but they never seem to love me.
Well, my immediate response to this is that you should meet up with the horrible girl earlier who likes to break guys' hearts.
Uh-huh.
And she should date these awful people.
Yeah.
And you should date the nice guys that she's destroying.
What is this bizarre world where nothing goes right?
I will tell you that you love smart, shy guys, but they never seem to love you. They're just shy.
Yeah, they are so in love with you.
They're so in love with you. They're just shy. They probably see that you date these jerkos, and they think that that's what you're into.
Yeah, and then they're going to turn into jerks.
Or
to
they're
try
just
to win you over.
Or they're going to be like, they're just going to say, I will not, I'm not even going to engage in this. Uh-huh. I'm clear. She's out of my league. It's just the wrong, you're doing it to yourself.
It's not even about being like out of their league, like they're better. It's just different.
You're in a different, it's a different sport.
Yeah.
You're in a different league in a different sport.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one's going to fix this but you. I mean, why don't you stop dating jerkos?
Yeah, date these smart, shy guys.
They sound great.
Mm-hmm.
They sound...
Yeah.
They sound like Mari.
It sounds like, you know, Scott has like... He's kind of shy, but he's also...
Also a jerk?
I don't know. It's not like that you like attention, because everyone likes attention, but it's just you have a... Sometimes a very charismatic personality, and people like you, I think.
Well, not her. She's not.
Okay.
Why doesn't she just tell me? If that's how she feels, would she just come out and say it?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Go tell the shy guys.
Yeah.
Go get them. They're good guys.
I have a phobia of death. I'm not really afraid of how or when I'll die, but that I will be dead. I don't believe in an afterlife or anything. I've told very few people this, and some I understand, but none can empathize. I don't have panic attacks about it much anymore. Anyways, here's the question. Are you guys afraid of being dead?
I think that I went through a time in high school
mm-hmm.
where I was terrified of death.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really, I feel like it just resolved itself. And I think it was just from reading lots of books, or I don't know exactly what happened. I think everybody goes through this. And if you can't find people that empathize, maybe they just haven't hit it yet. Because I'm pretty sure everybody at some point in their life is afraid of death.
It probably just has to be like the right setting and, you know, the tone of the conversation. No, you can't be like, "I'm afraid of death, Scott," and then expect someone to take you.
Hey, me too.
Super seriously.
That's a weird coincidence.
Whoa.
So what are your plans? How do you plan to stay alive forever?
I'm gonna invent a time machine, or I'm gonna use alchemy to make a sorcerer's stone.
Okay, that sounds like a good plan.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is one of those things that you just get tangled up in. I do remember being afraid of it, like really troubled by death, and I don't know. I don't know really when my perspective changed. I feel like it kind of played itself out, because I don't know that I just had a huge epiphany one day. My stance now is one that life is just so long and awful.
We talked about this last time.
Can't be that bad. No, I think it is. Well, there's plenty of takes on this, and there's plenty of like literary approaches. I think the most positive view of this you can have is that death is what gives life its meaning, you know, the fact that it's limited. If you had unlimited chocolate chip cookies, you're just going to get tired of them one day. But if you only have one, you got to savor that cookie.
Mm.
And I think that because there's a time limit.
I want a cookie now.
Yeah, me too. Because you could just die any second. Just eat that cookie now. I think that maybe, and if anything, maybe this is a healthy thing. Like if you can learn to not be afraid of death necessarily, but really understand the reality of it, that you will die and everyone you know will die and everything that you love will die, and just understand that is just a very fundamental part of nature, that will make life that much more precious to you, that'll make your own life more precious, that will make the people around you more precious, and make you more understanding that you need to let them know that. I think it's...
Totally, yeah.
I think it's a good kick in the pants, and it's... I don't know. I've read plenty of things where people talk about like death is just always hanging over them. Like you just always got to be aware. And I don't know that it has to be that morbid. It was kind of a simple little project, but it's something that I liked, where I made what I called the shortness of life clock. And it's just a clock that has no hour or minute hands. It's just seconds passing. And it's not to be a morbid thing. It's not to say life is going to end any second. It's just to say, you know, time's passing. And you've got a limited amount of ticks, and you should try to do what you can with those ticks when you have them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the shortness of life clock, one, because I like the idea of it being the SOL clock, but also because there's I don't know what to call it exactly. There's a writing by Seneca, a Roman fellow, and it's called On the Shortness of Life, I think is the title. And that's kind of what it's about, is you've got a limited amount of time, you need to invest it. You only get so many bites of that cookie. You got to enjoy it.
Yeah. And that's not to say that you have to go through your entire life worrying about, or not worrying about, you know, being like some sort of flower child and embracing life all the time. You know, every now and then you think about death and you think about your loved ones and you want to do nice things and make beautiful things. And sometimes it passes.
I actually, one of the interesting things about it for me is I feel like it works as a solution in both scenarios. So if there's a scenario where I feel like I'm like totally lackadaisical and just can't get motivated, and it works as a kick in the pants. Like, you've got a limited amount of time. You need to you know, get cracking.
Maybe that's my problem.
It works on that end. But for me, at certain times in my life, it has also worked on the other end, where it's like, you know, it doesn't, you're stressing so much about this, but it's in the grand scheme of things, you're going to be dead one day. It's just not, it's not that big a deal.
Mm-hmm.
This is just this fraction of cosmic time. Mm-hmm. And so it's really a matter of perspective, I think. And I think developing a healthy perspective on death is part of being a healthy person, just because it's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm afraid of death. I don't know that I've ever, like, I don't think I worry about it too much. I'm more afraid of being old. I think there are worse things than death.
Whoa.
Just, I don't want to be old and regret everything.
Yeah, just don't. God.
But I don't think about it enough. So sometimes I'll just lay in bed and sleep in until like 3.
I don't know. It's tricky. You got to find your own way. There's so much writing and work about this. Start with shortness of life. That's why not? Seneca. Go back to the beginning. What do we have next?
Me and my friends got naked at a gas station the other day.
What are your feelings on this?
Well, naked is capitalized. Maybe they're talking about naked juice.
They just bought some juice.
Yeah.
So do you think they're in the gas station, in the car, in the what? What's the scenario?
I think they're on a road trip and you know, that you pull up to a gas station and it's like, you know, this beacon in the distance, and they got naked because no one else was around for miles and miles and miles.
Okay. I don't really know what to say about this. I think people just get naked sometimes. It did put something in mind that I don't want to say that I want to confess, but I will confess because that's just part of what the show is. And I don't know exactly when it started, and I don't know exactly when it stopped.
Hmm.
But there was a period, I think mainly in the summer of 2009, I was under a lot of stress and there were lots of things happening in my life. But I got into the habit of going into the bathroom at public places and just taking off my clothes.
Oh, as like a thing to make you feel better in certain situations, or?
I don't know exactly what it was. I will say, I mean, I was looking pretty good because I was training a lot that was just how I was dealing with my stress. Uh-huh. And I was tan and it was hot and it was summertime and whatever. But that's just something I would do for a while. And I don't know exactly what it was. I don't know what it was, if it was some way liberating myself from life or work or whatever, but it was an interesting thing.
Did you check yourself out while you were in there, or did you just like strip down and then what?
I think I typically had to go to the bathroom. So I would go in and maybe like,
okay.
I don't know exactly what it was.
Yeah, when I was younger, like I'd come home from school and then I would go to the bathroom immediately because I don't like using the bathrooms at school. Sure. And I would just get naked and, you know, in my own home, not in public places. And it just feels better, maybe.
I don't know what it is. And part of it was maybe just because it was weird or what it was funny. I don't know exactly what it was, but in some way, it was therapeutic to me. Uh-huh. And I don't know exactly why. I recommend everybody should give it a try.
Yeah.
No one's going to know. And I'm not talking like stalls bathroom. I mean like a bathroom where at a coffee place where you go in and you close the door. And I don't know what it was. I don't know if it may have been like a way for me to work through or resolve. I don't know. It was a weird thing. I mean, it wasn't too long before that I had been involved with someone where we were frequently doing that together. So maybe it was some kind of death throes of that habit.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I don't feel like we didn't even strip all the way down. We just got to, you know, as bare as was essential.
Right. Well, maybe, you know, maybe you're just doing that with that person and then you, you're like, oh, this is kind of nice.
I don't know what it was. I was a crazy person that summer and it's just one of the things I did.
Mm.
And so, but it was, hey, give it a shot. Maybe you like it, everybody. Gas station or wherever.
Yeah. That sounds nice. Nakedness is nice.
Yeah.
Recently met a guy that I'd totally like to date. The problem is that I'm married. I'm not a cheater, but really like this guy. We've talked and decided to settle for being friends. Is this a good idea? Scott, what do you think?
Do people listen to us?
I don't know.
Do people listen to the words that could come out of our mouths?
Do people listen to anything?
No, they don't. Thanks at least for not giving him a blowjob and then asking us.
Who are these like married people that are listening to our podcast?
I don't know. I thought maybe this is naive of me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is crazy. I thought you got married because you loved someone and you wanted to be exclusively involved with that person.
Yeah.
I thought you didn't get married until you were pretty sure like, yeah, this guy. Okay.
Maybe this was like Google translated or something from China and marriage just, you know, got lost in translation and it's supposed to be like,
I don't.
There's supposed to be dating.
The problem is I'm married. Do you think that maybe this was like, maybe it was like an iPhone autocorrect and it's not the word married.
Yeah.
It's some other problem.
The problem is that I'm
Italian.
No.
No. I don't know what to say.
Okay.
Don't cheat.
It is not a good idea. Or no, I mean, it is a good idea to be friends.
Yes. And maybe it's good that you talked about it. I mean, to me, that seems a little dangerous, but getting on some thin ice, but
I don't know how there are two people who are like, should we cheat? Should we have an affair?
I'm glad you didn't. Thank you for not doing that.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm having difficulty thinking of a scenario where someone writes something like this in and will be like, yeah, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Do it. Maybe if you're married to like an evil king and you're a princess and you're kept in a tower
mm-hmm.
and a prince comes, I don't know.
But even in that situation, you should get a divorce first and make sure everything's all clear.
An annulment, something. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't.
Yeah. As much as I'm not a fan of marriage, like I don't really, it's not something I'm striving for. Don't cheat.
Gosh, it's just such a, nothing good comes of it.
You can be friends without doing anything.
I don't know. Feel good about yourself for not making a terrible decision, I guess. Good job on that. We have one more email, and this one came in at the buzzer.
Mm-hmm. We have a buzzer for when we're supposed to record the show.
We made our selections. We were just getting down to business, ready to record. Everything was tagged, marked, ready to go. And then suddenly this one rolls in.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided that it deserved our attention.
Dear Kiss and Tellcast, I sometimes fantasize about hooking up with an old fling. We used to mess around back in January, but broke things off because I wanted an exclusive relationship, and he wanted to stay friends with benefits. He now has a steady girlfriend, and so do I. I'm bisexual. Yet I think about him constantly. Is this bad?
So there's one guy and three girlfriends. Can we do the math on this?
Okay. So what you're saying is that this one guy should have three girlfriends?
If you're still thinking about him all the time. Maybe you liked him more than you thought. Maybe there were strings there that you didn't think there were. Back to my there are always strings theory. Sounds like there were some strings when you thought there were no strings.
Is that the string theory?
Yeah, that is Scott's string theory, is that you think that you're just getting down and there's no strings attached. But lo and behold, strings. And strings can span space, time. I've got strings that stretch halfway around the world through decades.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, these strings are complicated things.
Well, this is another fantasy thing. This is just like, I don't think it has anything. It's not like necessarily that this relationship is crappy and you want something else. It's just
it could be that you're 20 years old and you're experimenting. So you think you're bisexual, but really you're not. And maybe. I don't want to come down and say that all girls who say they're bisexual are not, but You look at OkCupid and every other girl is bisexual and they're all 22 years old. And I feel like I'm not saying it's a phase for you and I'm not saying it's a phase for everyone, but sure, it seems like a pretty common thing. We've known some people very, very closely that, particularly in art school, I think it's just a thing you go through.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe you're just.
Well, you got all these cute girls walking around.
Yeah, they're all cuties.
I would turn bisexual
for
them.
Short boy haircuts, and they're just down for anything. So maybe you're realizing that you are more drawn to him than you had realized. Maybe you're realizing that this thing that you're in was just kind of an experiment. Not that that's bad, but maybe it's just an experimental thing. And then now he's got a lady who's maybe a bit more serious, which is maybe a surprise to you because you thought you wanted to be benefits, but maybe he had some strings that he didn't know about. You're all tangled up in strings, people. I know. You just need to listen to me. Don't cheat and don't say there's no strings because there's always strings.
Okay, whatever. Yeah.
I'm going to tie you up in strings, Mari.
Sometimes strings are nice, though. Sometimes strings can make a blanket.
I love strings. I just wish they were nice. Organized, neat strings and not a tangled mess. All of the strings in my life right now are like the Gordian knot.
What knot is that?
It is a knot that is impossible. Not even impossible. It is a knot that is impossible to untie. And one day Alexander the Great rolled up to it and his challenge was to untie the Gordian knot.
Oh, okay. I know this one.
And kind of in breaking with the tradition of a hero actually, you know, achieving an amazing feat, he just cut it in half.
Mm-hmm. With his sword.
With his sword, which I kind of wish someone would do because I am a extremely knotted up fellow from some strings that I'm still tripping all over.
I'm trying to make that into something deeper than it is, but I'm just thinking about my kite.
Okay.
And how it's all tangled up, and I really want to fly kites.
Okay.
Maybe I should just cut the strings and get a new kite string.
Is it a boy kite or a girl kite?
No, I'm talking about an actual kite.
I know.
I haven't checked. I think it's a girl kite. I don't know.
I see. I don't know what to tell you. If you still like him, maybe you can tell him. Maybe he's still filling some things too. There's not any rules for this. There's who knows what'll happen. Yeah. If you're still feeling it, maybe. And if worst case scenario, you got that in your back pocket to know that maybe next time that you find yourself in a situation like that, you need to value it a little more. Mm-hmm. And if anything, that's one of the things that all these little scrapes and bruises and knives in the heart will teach you over time, that you're probably going to fail a few times. You're probably going to mess up. It's probably going to go wrong, but you should be learning from it. And that next time you're in that situation, you know a little bit more. And you can handle a little bit better. You treat the person a little better. So if nothing else, you can hope for that. Otherwise, maybe talk to him. But don't try to get him to cheat. I hate you if you do that.
Also, this was back in January that you're hooking up with this dude, and now you're both in relationships. I feel like these people are really young and are just jumping around in beds.
Maybe actually draft him a letter.
I think they're, you know, they have bouncy beds is what's happening. They have bouncy bed syndrome.
Maybe you guys should just all trade girlfriends. Like if there was a musical girlfriends thing.
Would that fix it?
No, that's a terrible idea.
I'm trying to think. No,
that's even more strange.
That wouldn't fix it.
It wouldn't fix anything.
Honestly, I feel like that's going to happen, though.
I know. It's going to happen. Who knows? We accidentally ended the show with a lot of relationships.
That's true.
I apologize.
I'm sorry, Patrick.
Listen, if you guys, we aim to please. We're doing what we can. If you guys want relationship secrets, we're going to answer what gets sent in. If you want crazy secrets, you got to send them in, man. We'll talk about what you send in. I will say that we give preference to crazy secrets.
Oh, totally.
We just don't get them enough, unfortunately. And if I can tell you that I made a habit of going into public bathrooms and spending some naked time, I think that you can have the decency to tell me a little secret.
Yeah, and there's something nice about those secrets that are about like loneliness or about relationships that we can all relate to. But we like the crazy ones a lot too.
We like those too, because also I think it all in some weird way. And maybe this is just me getting a little inflated, but I feel like we hear it from people. I feel like it helps people to hear that other people are up to crazy things.
Oh, yeah.
I think it helps people to hear that they're not the only ones thinking about death or suicide or cheating or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, these are pretty common issues. These are things common to the human condition. And I think that keeping it bottled up is not so healthy, and that we like to be a venue where these things can be explored and addressed without endangering you or making you feel insecure. So
yeah,
keep them coming.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Patrick.
I'm so sorry.
If you want to hear crazy things, you should go out and go do some crazy things.
And then write to us.
Yes.
That sounds like a great idea. Yeah. did you have any other show notes, Mari? I know that probably the most important show note that we typically forget is that we have to plug my refrigerator back in.
Yeah, because it's so noisy during the show.
We have to unplug it. And then I have gone, I think, days forgetting to plug it back
That's
in.
That's horrible.
It is horrible, but it's much quieter.
Yeah. We're getting better about it, though. This is episode 12, and we're finally remembering.
We're remembering to talk about it. I don't know if we remember to do it. Did you have another note?
My other show note is that, I want to, you know, talk more about embarrassing things from my past, but I just don't remember them. If they come up during conversation, I'm happy to talk about them. But I feel like maybe I'm forgetting things, and I know that people that I know are listening to the show. So if you have any embarrassing secrets about me, do you?
Mari,
do you have embarrassing things about me?
I have embarrassing pictures of you.
Oh, yeah, we can totally post those. I don't care.
Okay, no, I think that's a great idea.
That sounds weird.
I think that's a great idea. I think that if, and I the same goes for me, not that anyone that knows me listens to this, but that happens. And I find there's so many things that I've done in my life that are ridiculous that I just forget about. And I think it's nice to have a little refresher. So if you know anything about Mare, you don't hurt his feelings. Just write in.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, he doesn't give a crap.
I would love to have something to have like a story based on, you know, I don't feel like my life is epic enough sometimes.
Yeah. Any other show notes? The book that Mare and I collaborated on is, if you're in Seattle, is currently at Elliott Bay. We've got autographed copies there.
Yeah, we both signed it.
And it's right next to Mari's other book.
Mm-hmm. My other book, Letters to an Absent Father.
So if you like books that have letters to in the name, I can recommend both of our books and then Letters to a Young Poet by Rilke. I think is how you say his name. And those are, I think, the only ones I know.
Letters to Iwo Jima.
There's also...
Letters to Algernon.
I think those are flowers.
Nope,
those
they're flowers. Letters. They were letters too.
Dear Algernon, how did you like the flowers that I sent? I think that's it for notes. Our Facebook account has been climbing. Thank you, everybody who's liked us on Facebook. Let's keep that going. Please keep telling your friends. Send us in some secrets. Do we have a theme, Mari?
Nakedness? Sure. I can talk. I wanted to talk more about nakedness.
Okay. So the theme is naked. Again, do not feel obligated to write, you know, specifically addressing a theme. Write about anything you want. Yeah. Just if you need to get, you know, that's just to help you if you need help getting those.
It's like a writing prompt.
Yeah. Keep tweeting. Tweet right now. Whatever you're doing, it just takes a moment. Just tweet. It just takes just seconds.
Uh-huh.
Like us on Facebook. Check us out on Tumblr. But most importantly, go to kissandtellcast.com/tell and send those secrets.
That's please.
I think that's it. Thank you so much. That's it for episode 12.
Thanks. Bye, guys. I want to tell.